the past, if we have to bring it up, we'll need gloves, latex, pulled elbow high, a mask, gas, safety glasses. We'll take it outside, spread the decades in the sun, burn off the mold and the stink. Nancy Mitchell, in her book, The Out of Body Shop. Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. The past has come to us, brought forward by the senseless and brutal killing of a man in broad daylight by public servants sworn to provide him with a safe environment that enhances the quality of his life, consistent with the values of his community. It's William Faulkner in Requiem for a Nun who said, "The past is never dead. It's not even past." In the midst of a lethal pandemic and its attendant economic depression, our endemic racism has been laid bare before us by this killing. With our demonstrations, we have spread out the decades in the sun to burn off the mold and the stink. My guest today is poet Nancy Mitchell. Nancy is the poet laureate of the city of Salisbury and is also a professor at Salisbury University. She has published extensively, is a 2012 Pushcart Prize winner, and is associate editor of special features for Plume, an online poetry magazine. Nancy, welcome to Delmarva Today.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled and honored to be here.
Well, Nancy, we're going to discuss the poetry in your latest book, The Out of Body Shop. But first, tell us about your position as poet laureate. What do you do in your capacity as the poet laureate of Salisbury, Maryland?
It's my honor and privilege to serve my city as ambassador of poetry. And my job is to raise the awareness of poetry in our shared culture and to raise the awareness of how important poetry is in terms of articulating the current moment, whether it's personal or private, and an attempt to articulate and express the inexpressible. And to that end, I have a Poet Laureate Facebook page, and I have a Poets on the Plaza reading series where I, until the pandemic, I would have people come to the plaza, the heart of the city, and read their own poems. I've had guests on there from a window washer to the mayor of the city, from more famous poets like Grace Cavalieri and Charles Dunord. And it's just been wonderful. And I would love for you to recite a poem of your own or read one of your favorites and also be a guest on Poets on the Plaza. Well, so I hope you'll think about that.
Well, thank you very much for that invitation, Nancy. I appreciate it. I think your writing is beautiful as well as substantive. And I hope you'll forgive me for turning your poem, The Past, to reflect our contemporary setting. In this poem, you're as clear as Faulkner about the nature of the past and the way it works its way in our lives. It's also prescient in a very scary way, frankly. Gloves, masks, safety glasses. We need to be outside, the mold, and the stink of it. What did you intend to create when you wrote this poem?
Well, when I wrote the poem, I was thinking about how the process of healing after a trauma occurs. And one of the things that is necessary is to go back to the past and try to locate the point of trauma. And to do that, you have to, in the basement, go down and bring things up. And it takes, the past is, it is toxic in many ways. But the only way you can detoxify it is to bring it into the light. So actually, it was interesting because I was working on these poems for this book, and I brought some old, very, very old love letters up from the basement, and they did have mold on them. And I did spread them out in the sun, and I didn't have the mask on, but I had the gloves on, and laid them all out in the sun, and then started kind of going back into them, and I saved them again. I took them up thinking maybe it was time for them to not be a part of the past, of my past, but then I decided they were too valuable to me for many reasons, and put them back, you know, after they were clean again, and actually the mold had burned off, they went back into a new box and are stored for later. So part of the healing process is to retrieve the past and to bring it into the light with poems, with dialogue, and that's what I was trying to do. So I often will physically enact my poems to make sure they work, to make sure I know what I'm talking about. And I like to ground them in the physical as much as possible.
Right. So. This poem, as I read it and as I, excuse the expression, digested it and thought about it and felt what it was trying to do with me. It felt like this poem in its progression kind of wrote itself, that you got started with it. And then even though it's a short piece of work, it evolved into this magnificent, magnificent expression of the way the past has its way with us, if you would.
Definitely. Thank you so much for that close reading and allowing it to kind of roll around inside you, because the smaller poems and those lyric moments, I think they're very powerful. I'm a fan of the very short lyric because I think it's very potent, and I like to get it down to its most essential moment if possible. And it's not a pretty poem. I mean, I think it's shocking in a way. It's not, a lot of people may be, oh my goodness, where are the hearts and flowers, you know? But it's, the past is never past, you know, and it's with us. And we have to integrate it and befriend it in a way, because as Lyle Lovett said, if I had been the man that you wanted, I would not be the man that I am. So everything is a part of who we are, and it's the reintegration, facing in reintegration.
Integration. The name of your book is The Out of Body Shop. So we already get the sense that the other side of this might be some kind of integration. If we're out of body, that's an abnormal, to a degree, place for us. You have a poem called Intake Invoice. I wondered if you would read that poem for us, and then after you read it, talk about perhaps how this poem reflects your thoughts about the out-of-body shop.
Oh, thank you. I'll be happy to read it. Intake invoice, triggering secondary incident, female, fifth grade. School bus driver, grandfatherly, smelled of soap and rising dough, called her Chica Bonita. Ask about books she liked. His hands blue veins, skin thin as tracing paper, slid up her blouse, calloused edge of his thumb nicking her nipple. The whole time he was smiling. Typical symptoms, lightness of being, sense of shrinking, exit point, black hole in his eye, God hole, she called it. Static, yes, time out elapsed, unknown. And this is one of intake and voice is the intake of someone who has entered the out-of-body shop. And people enter it in different ways by trauma. And this particular, I'm sorry, I was just thinking of the trauma that some of the young protesters are going through right now. But this happened to a young girl in fifth grade, to a bus driver, school bus driver. When you think of school bus drivers, they're entrusted with our children, you know, the school bus driver. But she was molested. I can't say abused, but she was molested by the school bus driver, who softened the ground by making her trust him. And then while he's talking to her, he slides his hand up her blouse. And at that moment, there's always a disconnect. And I've done studies on trauma and have had my own. And this one was actually triggered by the Kavanaugh hearings, to tell you the truth. And many, many women were triggered to other memories. And they came back just as plain as could be. Actually, incidents that maybe they had suppressed. And that was one of my, the Kavanaugh moment of when someone who is totally unseen is taken advantage of. And this is a young girl, fifth grade, and she leaves her body. And when she leaves the body, when she leaves her body, she is in her body, but she goes out of it. And by way of the exit, got the God hole, because she's looking directly into his eye, but it's in the pupil of his eye that she leaves his body. And people are walking around all the time in the out-of-body shop. They've been disconnected from themselves because of trauma. And I think that was one of the voices. That was the first entry. I thought of clinicians, you know, here's someone coming into the out-of-body shop, and these are the presenting conditions. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely, it makes sense. So in this poem, in trauma, as an aside, I would almost suggest that our whole country is in the midst of trauma right now. And so it's good that with your poetry, we're talking about this as well. Kathy Carruth, a professor, actually a professor of English, but who has studied trauma quite a bit, tells us that trauma is a wound of the mind, not of the body. She says that the breach in the mind's experience of time, self, and the world is not like the wound of the body. And what you're suggesting in this poem with trauma is that she has, in fact, her mind has, in fact, detached itself from this body.
And what's happening to her body? It's, you know, in many, many studies of children who've been abused, when it's happening, they don't even recall it, because the only way they can cope with it is to leave their bodies. And the one of the symptoms is a sense of shrinking of the self, that you get so small and you don't exist anymore in that moment. And then you're small enough to leave the body by way of this this bus driver's pupil in his eye. And I think it's true. I think it's the only way people can survive something that's happening to their body is to leave their body, in a sense. And then coming back, it's more of a, where was I? You know, where was I? Where have I been? And it's very interesting to me. There's another poem in here, but it was taken from an article in the New Yorker about the children that were deported in Sweden, and they would go into this, it's called the Snow White Syndrome, Sleeping Beauty Snow White Syndrome, where they absolutely just went into this, they were catatonic. Nothing could rouse them. Nothing could rouse them at all. It's the only way they could cope is to be out of body. So it's interesting to me the different ways people cope. And then other people, they keep going, but they're totally disconnected from their emotions and from their sensual body. They're numb.
So. Yeah, Caruth talks about it, this out-of-body experience, I think, to some extent as being out of time and out of self, she says. I think that Caruth's comments are echoed to a degree in your poem, Why I'm Here, as well. Would you read that poem for us and talk about it a bit?
Well, it's interesting in a couple of ways, and which I'll talk about after I read it. Why I'm here. I have no clue. It was weird, yes, but I would say molested, but not abused, like the one here who was raped repeatedly and caged, or that one chained 400 days to a radiator. But the technicians insist, in layman's terms, there is always the initial primal, if you will, incident, after which the connection to the body is intrinsically damaged. Think electrical cord. Think frayed. It's a culmination of subsequent, less significant incidents that cause the final, often irreparable split. We all hear, want, hope to be fixed, but the chances of a successful retrofit to the body depend upon remembering. Most cases are too far gone. The damage. Excuse me, I was a little distracted. I think the ups man just came and went. Pandemic times.
Right.
What's interesting is that this is a voice of a woman who's found herself in the out-of-body shop in the same way that even in the out-of-body shop, it's like, I'm not really like them. You know, she's like, I don't know why I'm here. You know, how did I end up here? But I think it echoes what you were quoting in terms of the professor who talks about trauma, because it's not the final event that lands people in the out-of-body shop. There's always a primal wound. And then other things, subsequent events, fray it to the point, subsequent shocks, to the point of it becomes disconnected. So that's how I envisioned it. I also used to have these kind of odd visions of a umbilical cord, like out of the body, and being tethered to the earth by way of an umbilical cord, but then it's splitting and breaking off, so that you're kind of in this timeless zone, this zone that's like soundproof, and you can't feel your body anymore. And the other poem called The Out-of-Body Shop is you know, another character in the shop where she's saying, I slipped and fell. That's how she's saying she got to the out-of-body shop. But actually, she probably had a triggering incident, maybe in the grocery store on her way back, and then she's attributing it to a fall. But she's in there with everybody else, all the other voices that are kind of hanging in the out-of-body shop until they can get busy and start doing the work of reintegrating.
Yeah, you talk. You talk about a successful retrofit. Tell us a little bit about retrofit and your sense as an artist and a poet of how remembering affects that retrofit?
Well, I think it's with the initial poem, The Past. I think it's part of our health to go back and haunt the ghosts that haunt us, in a sense. And also what I'm working on now is inherited memory in terms of in utero memories. And there's a lot of research on that, that we actually, while we were in the womb, the things that happened to our mother that our mother actually heard or maybe read or the environment around us also contributes to our memory. And I think that that's what we go back to the trauma. A lot of people, you know, for example, my books haven't been that popular, say, with my family, right? So, because a lot of times what you have to go back to is looking at your past and also the past, your parents' past, and where you inherited this, say, racism, where you inherited these things that make you unhealthy, that make you detached, that make you removed from yourself and from others. So for me, the past, I like, it's almost like an artifact. A memory is like an artifact to me, that you go back, and if you can be in a space that you're not being triggered, or I just can't think about it, I'm going to, you know, if you can do that objectively, you can start kind of pulling it apart and seeing what is the core that's haunting you in that. And for example, in the poem about Bellhaven, it's about, it's a family poem, and it's some of it is, you know, it creative nonfiction, creative fiction in terms of details. But yeah, there was a lot of racism in the family, and there was a lot of things that were hushed up. And I got my information, I got the real news in the kitchen with the help. They were, their ancestors were slaves. They stayed on my family's plantation and worked there, continued to work there when I was growing up. And there are always these stories, these realities. And you, as a child, you always sense when it isn't true. You just have this sense that you're not getting the whole story. And I think that I was always after the story under the story. And I think that's important too. And also, you know, I undertook, I was always curious. I was never I never thought getting therapy was, oh my gosh, they're getting therapy. Although I was a child of the 50s and my parents never talked about that kind of thing. And, but I always thought it was interesting. It was an opportunity to kind of do this archival work on your own psyche. So, you know, it is a part of my work. It is. It's like, how accurate is this memory? I want to find out. And whose memory was it? And
well, that's an interesting, that's always an interesting point. Whose memory am I remembering here?
What's kind of germane to this moment, I think, is the fact that my mother's, on my maternal side, they were abolitionists, they worked for the Underground Railroad, they were Quakers, and, you know, just, I'm proud of those ancestors. And then on my paternal side, we're coming to find out, you know, descendants of Robert E. Lee, and also they were involved in the uprising in Wilmington, during Wilmington, North Carolina. And so there are these two things, you know, these, like a lot of us in America, you know, we have a mixed heritage and legacy. And I think we're struggling with that. I think it's we're sort of the walking metaphor for the country in many ways. And I think that's why everybody's hurting.
Well, we certainly carry the whole past of the country with us. I was raised in the segregated South, and I still feel what I absorbed in that segregated South. It wasn't so much memory And I choose that word advisedly as a young boy and a child, as absorption of the culture. And it speaks to me very often in ways that I do not want to hear. So
we're
almost out of time. And I wanted to get to this last poem because I love it. I think it's absolutely fantastic. And that is Unbearable. And I wondered if you would read Unbearable for us and comment on it.
Unbearable. Want to make love outdoors and eat dark bread. Knock out this wall with a sledgehammer and let the night in. Sink my arms in warm mud all the way up to my elbows. Swim in the black river that runs through the city all night, underwater. These are all just ways to be in the body, ways to be in the body. Galway Canal said, it's body makes love possible. Our bodies make love possible. And I've done all these things, by the way, except I haven't had my sledgehammer experience, but it was to knock all the walls out, and let the night in, to get past the walls that keep us from integration with the world. And the world is, look how much of the world isn't us, you know, isn't human.
I think that for me, this poem is the integration. We talked a lot about separation in the out-of-body shop, but to me, this kind of sensual poem speaks of integration, because that's what's required, is the tactile, is the sensual, if you would. So I think that poem is just a fascinating piece of work. Well, Nancy,
one more thing. Go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
That's so perceptive of you, because unbearable is the point where
unbearable in the sense, not in the sense that I can't stand it, but unbearable in the sense that this is just amazing. I just don't know if I can sustain this
exactly.
body. Yeah. Oh,
and then it drives the body, it drives them back together again, that longing, you know.
Well,
thank you.
I'm sorry that we have so little time, but I wanted to thank you for joining me today and for sharing your work with all of us, which I think is fantastic. And I want to remind those with us that the Out of Body Shop, it's your most recent work.
Yes,
I believe. And I found it absolutely fascinating. And I want to encourage all of our viewers and listeners to read your book. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
And I want to thank all of you for joining us today as well. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.